You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts.
Well, hi everyone. Welcome to the 200th episode of Plants Grow Here. And for a change, I'm Karen Smith and I am going to interview Daniel Fuller. So this will be quite unusual to most of the episodes you've listened to because you're usually listening to him. So good morning, Daniel. Welcome to Plants Grow Here.
Thanks, Karen. How are you going?
I'm pretty good. You must be feeling pretty excited to have reached your 200th episode of your podcast.
Absolutely. I remember at the start just thinking like, oh, do I have enough episode topics to keep it going? And now I just think like I'm never going to get through all the topics that I want to get to, so it's not even a problem. I'm just going to keep going.
You're dead right about that. I often say to people, you could live 10 lifetimes and you're scratching the surface in horticulture. So the fact that you continually find new topics to talk about, personally, I think is part of the attraction of working in the industry is that you're continually learning. And for you, I would imagine or I suspect that actually being the host of the podcast of Plants Grow Here, that's been particularly good for your own professional development. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first started the podcast, I was a team leader for a small business. I just sort of led the garden ute. And, you know, that was great, but I didn't really know how I was going to progress my career because I look at the business owners around me and I think, well, that's not the life that I want for myself. And then I'd look at the managers at the larger companies and I'd be like, well, that's not really my personality either. So which way am I going to go? So the podcast was kind of like, it was the next step in the blog that I'd created, Plants Grow Here, which was like me trying to figure out what I was going to do with my career. And yeah, it was a really good move, the podcast, more so than the blog, because I mean, it's led to the AIH Award of Excellence last year. It's led to a position on the council with the AIH. It's led to speaking gigs. I get paid with sponsorships and I actually get control over those sponsorships. So some podcasts don't get to choose what their messages are.
Okay, and for those of you who may not know what AIH is, it's the Australian Institute of Horticulture.
Yes, it's a huge part of our industry for the people who are a part of it. And if you're not a part of it, I would actually recommend just Googling it.
Well, I think it's a good thing to be involved in lots of industry organisations and get involved if you really particularly want to learn a lot and progress your career at the same time. The more things that you can be involved in, the better it is all round. Mm. So with your 200 episodes, you think about what you know now or what you've learnt from the various people that you've spoken to over that time. Exactly how long has it been?
Well, it's almost been 3 years now. So did I start in 2020? Yeah, that was a lockdown, so it's 4 years.
Well, we're just into your fourth year because it's only just turned 2024,
three
really.
And a half years.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting because I believe a lot of people actually did start podcasts during from 2020, during the pandemic, but a lot fizzled out fairly quickly. So what is it for you that's made you continue along with yours?
Just like a love for it, like not to sound corny, but I really do enjoy it. It gives me like a lot of excitement to keep interviewing these people. I mean, I get to talk with these people who know so much who I wouldn't have had a chance to talk to in the past. And also I think the podcast is something of value. So it's like something that brings meaning to me.
Well, you used to listen to a lot of podcasts yourself, didn't you, when you were working to sort of pass the time a little bit and learn at the same time. And, yeah, it is a good part of people's professional development. Many of the episodes I've listened to myself, you know, there's something in every episode that you learn.
I try to make it like that, yeah. And that's why I don't just interview people on a whim. I'll pick someone who stands out, whether it's on social media or from a friend of a friend or someone in my extended network who knows about a particular topic and whom I think can explain that topic. And then I write a bunch of questions for them to answer, send those questions through to them, and then very rarely they'll actually improve it. I think that they usually seem to be happy with just whatever I wrote. And I do encourage guests to, you know, edit my questions more because it can help make a better episode. But I think it's that idea that I've been consistent with, pretty consistent with. There are a few episodes that I went off the cuff for a variety of reasons. And actually one of those reasons is that some guests prefer not to have that structure. And so I'll send them through the questions and then I find that we're stumbling through the episode until I forget the questions altogether and then just start going off of what they're going off. And then it sort of becomes a different episode altogether. And I'm going to talk about one of those examples in this episode.
Sure. I should imagine too, even if your clients or guests, I should say, don't particularly want it structured, you still need to, as a podcaster, you still need to do your research to find out, to get an idea in your mind, the type of questions you're going to ask them. Plus, it is good to have a little bit of structure because it makes it easier for the listener.
Yes, you know,
if there's structure in there. So, what advice would you give to anybody who was about to start a podcast?
I think to begin with, you need a broad knowledge of what you're going to be talking about. So maybe you have a specific irrigation podcast and there is room for that podcast, but you need to know so much about irrigation that anything that somebody who is coming on the podcast to talk to you about their specific area of irrigation, they're going to bring up all this different stuff and you're going to need to have something to say about every single little thing and going to be able to help guide them along that conversation. So for me, it's just like generally amenity horticulture. So I kind of know a lot of general stuff. I'm not a specialist in any one area, but I can usually help guide that guest to get the most out of them because I have a foundational knowledge. So that would be my number one piece of advice.
Okay. So we actually talked about choosing some specific podcast to talk about. And I know from experience of you interviewing me about the Hort Journal magazine and asking me to pick, you know, a favorite or a editor's pick out of each magazine. And it's terribly hard because you invariably and hopefully like all of the articles that are in there, and it's very difficult to choose one. And for you to look back over 200 episodes and pick out 10 is really hard. So will we get started on and talk about some of those episodes that really had an impact on you?
Sure, but I just want to clarify, this isn't a list of the best episodes or my favorite episodes even, because every single episode has something different to offer, and I've never released an episode that I didn't think was good enough. You know, each one has its own place within the catalogue, and the ones that I'm going to talk about today, I don't know, there's an element of it that they are the best, but also they each provide a different representation of what the podcast is about. So I couldn't possibly pick my best 10 because I've tried and tried and tried, and the list ended up being like 50. So I've tried to narrow it down to some that I think speak the most to what I'm trying to achieve with the podcast, and I guess they're ones that I'm particularly proud of as well.
And do you also look at the amount of, can you see how many listeners each episode receives?
Yeah, some of them are the most popular, but some of them aren't. In fact, the last one that we'll talk about, my favorite episode, it doesn't perform that well, but I just think that it's it can help change your view on how plants interact with us as humans and how they interact with the environment around them. And it just raises a bunch of questions that have never been answered by science.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get started.
Let's do it. So, Karen, the first one that I wanted to talk about was episode 167, Integrated Weed Management with Kate Blood. So she's the environmental department in the Victorian government. So it used to be the Department of, I think it was Environment, Land, Water and Planning. Now it's DECA, the Department for Energy, Environment and Climate Action.
Ah, interesting, yes.
So it's basically, it's just a prime example of an episode that can be used in training material. So it's just such a resource for the industry, and the level of depth that Kate Blood brought to this episode was really impressive. Just she took the questions that I used as a framework and she unpacked 100 minutes of solid gold. And I think that this episode is one that could be used in TAFE curriculums, even university curriculums. Companies should be encouraging their staff to listen to this episode in the work. You come away from that episode knowing more than you did going into it. And I think weed management is one that we tend to oversimplify. Just spray some Glyph on it and then put some mulch over top. And that's job done. Well, no, not really. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I did listen to that episode and I was very impressed with it, I have to say.
Oh, good.
Okay. Next.
Next one. So episode 38, Plant Biology Basics with Professor Roz Gledow, who works at the Monash Uni.
Yeah.
So that's another one that's just, it's similar to the one that I talked about before. It's just an example of an episode that can be used by industry, by training organizations. Biology isn't something that's easy to talk about on a podcast. Usually we'll have like lecture slides and diagrams. And there are diagrams in the show notes for people to go and look at. I actually created those diagrams for, well, I had them created with a graphic designer. And that was for the blog years and years and years ago. But they came in handy in this episode because when she's talking about, you know, xylem and phloem, you can just go onto the diagram and see exactly what she's talking about. But at the same time, I have no illusions that every listener is going to go and click those links. But the episode still has a great retention rate, which means that people listen to the whole thing. And I just think she did such a great job of bringing it down to a trade level. You know, she lectures at university, but we're working in work utes, most of us.
Right. Well, that's a good one. Episode 38. Okay. And that's early in the piece, really, number 38, isn't it?
Yeah. So with the podcast, I have, there's like three different types of episodes that I like to do. One is, you know, we're learning a topic. Or two is like current affairs and like industry events. So I want to go and cover those and see what's going on because it gives us an indication of like what's changing in the industry.
Yeah.
Because those industry events can often be a little bit ahead of the times, or at least current. We're not seeing old stuff at these industry events.
No.
And the third type is that I like to do a case study of an individual or a particular organization doing something interesting because we can learn something from them as well. So far the two that we've done are, you know, integrated weed management and biology basics. They're really just like topics to help us just see through the matrix of plant care, I guess.
Okay. All right. So what's next on the list?
So episode 181, A Daydream Supported by a Series of Equations with Peter Donegan.
Ah, yes, the designer.
Yes. So he's a garden designer, landscape architect from Ireland. And, you know, he's sort of a big deal in the AIH. He's won a bunch of awards last year. And I think everybody really resonated with his design at Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show last year. And he's back again this year. But in this episode, I'd never met him. I didn't know who he was. And I had all these questions prepared and I kind of went into the episode. And about 2 minutes in, I realized, oh, I'm talking to an artist. So I threw away all the questions in the episode topic that I thought I was going to do, and I really just tried to drill down on his, on him as an artist, but not necessarily just about him. I wanted to see the way he thinks and if I can bring anything out of his brain, download into our brains and help make us more creative, because he's an incredibly creative person.
Yeah.
When you talk to some garden designers, they're very technical, and Peter has that. You know, everything is precise. And in fact, that's actually represented by a quote that he gave, which became the episode title, A Daydream Supported by a Series of Equations. It's sort of the left brain and the right brain and how they're working in harmony to create essentially what I think would be a masterpiece of a garden.
Well, I think a lot of people that actually go into landscape architecture or garden design love to tap into their creative side and hence the artistic side as well. I mean, creativity doesn't necessarily mean artistic, but for some people the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, and, you know, pretty colours is one element of it, and shapes and forms and plant habits and how they all interact with each other, that's one element of it. But actually Peter, he kind of reminds me of, I don't know, that Irish tradition of poets. Like sometimes you'll listen to like an Irish musician or something talking to the crowd.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. There's just this general Irish poet vibe that I think Peter embodies.
Oh, yes, and the accent goes down well with that too, doesn't it? You know, he does have a lovely voice.
But it's also, so he created a garden that represents the feeling of being cut off from a lover, but still somehow in the daydream it's still possible that you can get with her, but in the waking life you can't. And this dichotomy of like the dream world and the waking world, I just found it incredibly rich and interesting.
Fabulous. Okay. What next?
So next we have Horticulture Media as a Career with some lady called Karen Smith.
Oh, now you're too kind.
So, Karen, this episode, it was recorded around about 1 year after I first released the podcast, and it was one of four episodes that we did together, if you remember, around that time, and we had some other guests as well.
Yes.
But, you know, the podcast was just starting to gain enough traction that I was starting to believe that I could make a career in hort media work out. So it was really good to be able to pick your brains because you've sort of been doing it for a lot longer than I had. And I think we sort of formed a connection over that and you ended up becoming my mentor. And it's been incredibly valuable for me personally just trying to move in that direction because, okay, so I don't want to be a team leader forever. I don't want to be a manager. I don't want to be a business owner. Maybe I'll make this hort media career thing work. And, yeah, that episode really came around at the right time for me. And I think it's a good resource for people who feel similarly, that they're like, okay, maybe hort media is the direction I go in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a few episodes on it, but that would be the first one that I tell people to go and have a listen to before they even...
What episode number was that?
That was episode 72.
72. Oh, yes. So it was fairly early in the piece. Well, I have found myself working in the horticultural media extremely interesting, particularly because you have to keep an open mind about everything and not get terribly involved, caught up in the politics of things. So it's nice that you can go into so many directions and, you know, just keep that open mind and meet lots of interesting people and attend lots of interesting events as well.
Karen, I find, like, as a horticulturist, I'm sound, I'm okay. I know a lot of horticulturists who are just a lot better than me and a lot of landscapers and designers who have skills that I don't – I'm not naturally a designer type. My wife is. She just sees colours and she's constantly opening my eyes to that world of beauty. I think that the way I view the world is very much – I'm very interested in, like, subjects and topics and exploring ideas. And that's really where I want to spend my future is talking about ideas, bringing them up, trying to get deeper into horticulture. And I really want to bring those lessons back to the community. So that's really where I see my future. And I'll, you know, obviously I'm never going to stop gardening. I love gardening. But I think I've realized over the years that I'm not the one who's going to be managing the team. I don't like managing people. And if anything, I was going to stay on the tools for the rest of my life. But I thought, well, maybe I'd like to move in a different direction just for my own career progression. So, and that's the direction I've gone in and I'm really loving it.
Well, that's good. It makes a big difference when you enjoy what you do. Okay, moving along. Which episode is next on your list of goodies?
Okay, so we've got episode 2, Intro to Soil Science with Samantha Grover from RMIT.
Yes, I remember that one, yes.
So that's actually by far the most popular episode. Like it has four times the average download numbers. Like it's just head and shoulders above the others.
Well, it all begins with the soil. And when you think about it, the soil is the key ingredient. Getting the soil right, that's conducive to what you're growing. If you get the soil right, the rest is easy. So I can understand why that would be a particularly popular episode. Mm. The more you can't know enough about soil.
No. So when I was first launching the podcast, I had, I think, 12 episodes recorded, and I was cataloguing them in terms of which ones I wanted to go first and, you know, the order of them. And I just thought, look, when people sort by new episodes on their favorite podcast listening app, they're always going to get a new episode. But when they sort by oldest episode first, it's always going to be the same one. So I thought, well, it just needs to be a foundational topic. And I just thought, well, what else would I put as coming first than soil science?
So yeah, exactly.
And so I think that there are three factors, I think, that make that the most popular episode. Is one, it's the placement at the top of the list. By the way, episode one was our mission, so it doesn't really count as an episode. It was just going over what we intend to do, or what I intend to do with the podcast.
So I knew that
I wanted a foundational topic. So I think the three factors that make it the most popular episode are, one, it's a foundational topic that we all need to know about, and, you know, you can never hear soil science too many times. Like, I constantly still brush up on this stuff. Two, I think that the placement of it being, you know, right at the top when you sort by old, it's just it keeps getting new listeners. And thirdly, Samantha Grover was a really good communicator. She just really explained the topics really well. And she's very personable. So I think that those are the three factors that make it the most popular.
And a fabulous skill to have when you're working as a lecturer in university. It makes such a big difference when the lecturer can communicate in a way that keeps your interest and helps you understand. It's fabulous. Hats off to Sam.
Yeah. So I found her just through searching through university lecturer lists. Like, that's how I found some of the first guests. I just went through and I had a look at different bios and, you know, who does what topic. Well, that's actually an interesting topic. Intro to Soil Science would be good. She's also the president for Soil Science Victoria. She's got done this, and then she's been interviewed here, and then she's been interviewed there. And then, like, okay, so this is one of the first guests I'm going to do, because my network wasn't huge back then. I mean, I was working on the tools and I knew some people, but I wasn't even a part of industry organizations, which is something that you recommended that I do, and that's something that really pushed my career forward.
Good. Well, I'm glad you got involved in industry organizations, because it just completely broadens your outlook on horticulture, and getting the variety in those organisations. I mean, for me, as working on a magazine, I'm involved in lots of different sectors of the industry. And for me personally, that's probably the highlight of my role as editor, is the fact that I can spread my wings and, you know, attend different events from different sectors of the industry and meet people and learn. That's fabulous. So
I love
that. That's great. Yeah.
I have a couple more things to say about that episode too. This episode, the questions for the episode, I just based off of my TAFE course. Like, I just looked over my TAFE notes. I just basically did the whole TAFE course in about an hour, in a little bit over an hour. I just thought, well, if I'm going to create a podcast, it's going to be different than the ones I know about. The ones I know about were all about mainly home gardeners, and there was a really good arboriculture industry one, but it was more like about personal stories. And I just thought, look, there's a gap here for basically my TAFE courses, but just as a conversation. So that was really what I attempted to do. And I really hated my voice when I was interviewing Sam. She was one of the ones where I re-recorded my whole parts of all my voices. So what you hear sounds like a conversation, but it's actually her reactions are genuine, but mine are all like a bit more conceived, and I re-recorded myself and learned a lot through that process of re-recording myself about tonality and what works and what doesn't work and how to sound interesting without too interested and too exciting, because it's a tightrope to walk.
Yes, it's always a bit of a shock when we hear our own voices being recorded, and And I should imagine to go, and having done some podcasts myself, to have to go back over and edit a whole thing like that, I think I would have just about melted with frustration.
But it took about a day at least for that one
episode. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, when you're doing that sort of thing right at the start, as you say, you learn a lot. You learn a lot from your mistakes, don't you?
And I learned a lot about editing too. Like, it was a real masterclass.
Yes, that was the thing I was thinking of. The editing is can take longer than the podcast itself.
Yeah, it does. It does take longer. I listened to it at 1.6 to 1.8 times speed, and it still takes longer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So, yes, doing the podcast in itself. A lot of people think, oh, yes, I could do a podcast, but they don't realise what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah. No, you can talk to people.
Yes, yeah, you can talk to people, but, yeah, and then, you know, we all make mistakes when we're talking and get tongue-tied or use spoonerisms and that all needs to be edited out. But
I don't edit out most of that stuff. Like, there are a lot better speakers than me, and that's not really even like a priority. I do think about how I speak, but I know, like, when I listen back to myself, I'm just used to it now. I know I kind of go on a lot of tangents, and I can kind of change a thought midway through a sentence sometimes. No. And I just think that's just part of what I do, and that's just part of the way my brain works. And I choose to celebrate that rather than to run away from that.
Yeah, well, that's good. All right, are we done with episode two? All right, which number are we going for next? The lucky dip.
Episode 160, Nursery Industry Secrets, with Bruce Durant, who works for a sponsor of the podcast, Arborgreen.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So this is the best performing sponsored episode that I've ever released.
Wow.
So it's received almost double the amount of an average episode for downloads. I think people just love this episode because Bruce is very charismatic. He's a great rep for the company. In fact, he's actually the voice doppelganger of Mark Valencia from Self-Sufficient Me. So some of the listeners might know him, and I just think they sound almost identical. Very charismatic person. They also love the episode because the title is good, Nursery Industry Secrets. It's a bit clickbaity. And it doesn't disappoint on that, so it actually delivers. The content of the conversation was just relentless. It was just so much value for the whole industry from start to finish, and the episode was an hour and 50 minutes, so it's one of the longer episodes I've ever done.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? An hour and 50 minutes, and yet it's been one of the most successful. Mm. So it goes to show you, like people say, oh, no, they can be too long, but if the topic is on target. Yeah.
A lot of people say in the podcasting space that you should have a consistent episode length. Like, oh, because then when people travel to work, they know that, you know, they have to listen to, you know, they've got 20 minutes of this episode and their commute is 20 minutes. Yeah, but what about the people whose commute is 25 minutes? What about the people whose commute is 35 minutes? Everyone's going to have to start and stop an episode at one point. And I feel that it's better to do justice to the topic and to really explore it as much as I can rather than to artificially cut one short or artificially lengthen one beyond what it needs to be.
Yeah, I agree. And look, there's nothing to stop somebody from playing the second half later. Well, I often listen to a podcast when I'm walking. So if I get one for an hour and 50 minutes, I know I'm getting a good workout that day.
Well, that's how I use podcasts too. I'll pause it and then come back to it. And I think that's generally how podcast consumption is. It's not talkback radio. It's talkback radio on demand.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm. Well, that's good. 151 minutes. That's an epic.
Yeah, it was epic. But, you know, we go over stuff like what is the most popular flower color? And just stuff that's just like, it's not just for the nursery industry, although nursery people will learn a lot from Bruce because he's been in the game for, I can't remember how long, but decades. And now he's a consultant to people who work in the industry. He's the consultant on behalf of Arborgreen that, you know, his portfolio is the nursery industry. Like, that's what he does. He helps them find solutions to their problems.
Yeah.
So he knows what are the most popular problems. It's not just his nursery and his experiences. He's also drawing off of all of his clients' experiences. And I think that's an example of the type of sponsored episode that I really like doing, where it's not like, and now a moment from our sponsor. And you know what happens then? Everyone just clicks skip. Whereas this is actually valuable. It's like it doesn't matter that it's sponsored or not because we're still learning about it. And let's face it, if you're working in the industry, you probably need to buy from someone. And Arborgreen's starting to look pretty good. And you already know Bruce. So, you know, reach out to Bruce and ask him about tree stakes and ask him about, you know, what pot should I be using to prevent root girdling? We talk about all this stuff in the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's information people want to know, and hence the reason that it's been a successful podcast.
Yeah, I think so. It's a good example. I mean, we've done other sponsored episodes with Hort Journal. Like, we talk about topics that Hort Journal have talked about. I interview the writers. I've done Charlie Carp talking about, okay, so how do you source your fish? Well, there's a really interesting story there about how they're taking, you know, pest European carp species out of Australian estuaries. So, and that's how they make that product. And then how do we use the product, you know, like how do we grow vegetables in, I think it was how to grow winter veg was another episode I did with Charlie Carp, just with a gardener called Maria. And we, who's a rep for that company as well. I guess you call her an influencer. I think micro-influencer or influencer is the term that we use these days, where it's like she's out there with her own social media following and she does all this stuff, and then Charlie Carp are like, all right, well, we've got this podcast opportunity. We want you to step up. And it was just great. You know, we go over how to grow winter veg, and then just as naturally as a part of that conversation, it comes to, well, what about fertilizers? Well, you know, you need soil stuff in the soil and you need stuff on the leaves. And then, you know, well, which one?
So you're talking there about Charlie Carp. Is that another episode?
No, that's just an example of more sponsored content that we do. Okay. So just off the back of Nursery Industry Secrets.
Yes, yes.
But the next one would be episode 78, Attracting Predatory Insects to Control Garden Pests Naturally, with Dr. Ian Smith.
He's excellent.
Yeah. So anyone who listens to the podcast will recognize that name.
Yes, he's very talented.
Yeah, he's. I like the way his brain works too. We just sort of connected on Twitter. I think we just resonate on the same frequency, just in terms of like what he was talking about and what I was talking about were both interesting to each other. So he's an entomologist. He is an ecologist. He's also a plant lover. And his background comes from, he's done everything from border security to agricultural extension work, helping farmers get the most out of their property. And his PhD was on shelter belts. So this guy just knows so much about how to attract predatory insects.
Yeah.
And, like, what a foundational topic. Like, it's just, it's almost right up there with soil. It's probably the next step after soil is building an ecosystem in the garden.
Exactly.
It's just the difference between success and failure a lot of the time.
Yeah. No, I've have enjoyed the episodes with Ian Smith, Dr. Ian Smith. So
yeah, that episode would have fit really well into my course curriculum for my integrated pest management course at uni, at TAFE rather. So, you know, there was at least one podcast that didn't need to be in my curriculum. It was just a chat between two farmers. And I just think I would have loved to have had this one in, because this guy's actually talking about integrated pest management. Like, it from start to finish, it's basically everything that I learned in my TAFE course. And, yeah, he just brings it right down to earth, gives examples, you know, gives us examples of plants that are going to achieve this, but also gives us the framework to choose new plants. So he's like, yes, alyssum is an example that we're going for, but actually it's basically any small flowering plant that is good for small sucking mouth parts. So, you know, aster family, brassica family, just all these small, like clistemons, wostringias. So those are examples, but also having the framework of knowing how to choose the plants is really important. And it's beyond plants too. It's also about microclimates and sources of water. It kind of goes through it all.
Hmm. Oh, that's good. Interesting. Mm. Yeah, I did listen to that episode. I thought it was great.
Mm.
A wealth of knowledge is Ian Smith.
He is a wealth of knowledge.
Okay.
So moving on, we've come to episode 96, How to Prune Trees Correctly with Gary Moran.
Oh, yes, and we certainly see a lot of trees out there in the community that that certainly look terribly sad. In fact, just mentioning that topic reminds me of that Crimes Against Horticulture.
Yes.
Fellow. Yep.
Yeah, those two. So studying pruning at TAFE and also Crimes Against Horticulture made me shake my head at all the damage I've done to different gardens and different plants over the years. Like what I thought was good was just taking a hedge trimmer to any plant that was in a pathway or any plant that was getting large and just turn it into a fridge shape or a hemisphere or just like a hockey puck shape.
Yeah,
and that was what I was taught to do, you know, for years. So it was really good to get Gary Moran on the show to sort of, I don't know, teach us what not to do and to teach us what to do. And that's another episode where it's difficult to express these complicated, well, not complicated, but nuanced ways of pruning without diagrams. And there were diagrams in the show notes, but I know that not everyone's going to do it. And I think Gary did a really good job. So it was stuff like, you know, how do you explain a branch collar without having a diagram? Well, he did it. How do you explain like the angle that you need to cut at? Well, he did it. How do you explain where, like what the consequences are for each type of cut, whether it's a non-selective heading, a selective heading, or a removal cut? And what do those terms even mean anyway? It just gives, you know, especially maintenance gardeners a framework to approach tree pruning, because arborists should already know it, but horticulturists often don't get taught this stuff. And the same rules apply to shrub pruning and tree pruning. Just trees are a little bit different in terms of like the consequences can be a little bit more severe if you top them or if you malprune them, whereas shrubs, because the branches are a lot thinner in diameter, they can heal more easily.
Hmm. Yes, I, as part of my horticulture course years ago, I studied tree care and maintenance, which was sort of the introduction there to arboriculture. And I can remember one of my lecturers saying that there was a theory going around that trees in the community, you know, your street trees are pruned badly because it keeps arborists in a job. But these days I would rarely ever see any arborists in my street pruning. I mean, they have to come and cut under the power line sometimes, and hence the reason why a lot of trees are pruned badly. But sometimes you think, did they have to plant such a big tree under a power line?
There are other choices, aren't there? But they look cool. Like in Melbourne we did a lot of them. Not me, but we had a lot of them in Melbourne. And that's a masterclass on pruning, because you actually can have a look at the cuts that they make, the growth response from the tree, and when it's done really well, the tree just really does grow right around that power line without too much interference, and it's a beautiful thing when it's done well. Horrible when it's done poorly, but when it's done well, it's a real masterclass.
Yeah. So which is your next episode?
So we're 8 down, Karen. So we've got 2 more to go. Next one is episode 110, Maintaining a Heritage Garden in the UK with Scott Smith.
Ah, yes.
So this episode is a case study. So it's an example of a particular person doing interesting things in the industry in a particular workplace. So I sort of connected with this guy on LinkedIn, Scott Smith from Scotland. And he was working in these gardens that I could only have ever dreamt to work in. It's Pitt Meddon and Haddo House. So they're two heritage gardens in the UK. He was one link in a long chain of people who'd been there long before him, and hopefully, you know, gardeners that will be there after he's left. And he has now left that site now. But I just thought it was so cool. Like, for me, having been working in, you know, houses that would be lucky to be 100 years old, very few houses I've ever worked in would be 100 years old, let alone however long that these places had been around. And I just thought it was so cool how he was just, yeah, like a part of something that was bigger than himself. Not only that, but that he also got to spend the time to get the horticulture right, whereas throughout my whole career on the tools, it's been like rush, 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 rush. The client doesn't know any better. He doesn't know the difference between if I prune it this way or that way. He won't even see it, and we just got to get this job done and then get on to the next victim. And that was a joke we used to say in the ute, was next victim. You know, we'd be done in 20 minutes, we'll jump back in the ute and go, next victim, and we'd drive on to the next one.
I think, you know, for people like Scott, who's working for the National Trust, they are heritage gardens, and there is certainly, you know, they're not just going to employ anybody. They want people with the right skills that's going to keep those plants going, because, you know, these gardens are hundreds of years, well, the properties themselves, I don't know if you've ever been to the UK, but it's well worth when you go to join the National Trust, because you get to go and see all these beautiful gardens as part of your membership. Yeah. And, you know, you certainly just wouldn't go in there and start pruning things if you don't know what you're doing.
No.
Well, you wouldn't last long if you did.
They'd kick you off straight away. You wouldn't make it through the interview.
Yeah.
He's talking about scaffolding and string lines for hedging. And
yes.
What time of year we prune. Well, in my experience, we prune when it needs pruning. What do you mean, what time of year do we prune? It's a 40-degree day, 0% humidity. No, just get out the hedge trimmer and trim it. And it died. Well, we don't know why that happened. It must have been a disease. So.
Yeah, that all comes down to experience, doesn't it?
And yeah, but it's also the budgets that were allowed to him to work in this garden and really get it right. So that was a cool episode.
Yeah.
And we've gone on to collaborate on a bunch of stuff, and we'll talk about some of his hort skills episodes in a little bit. In a little bit. But we have one more episode, Karen.
Okay.
I think that this is my personal favorite episode. And I think it's just because, I said I like exploring concepts and ideas. That's really the way that my brain works. That's my happy place. I'm definitely an overthinker, and that comes with strengths and weaknesses. But this episode, my mum sent me a link to a YouTube video of this guy who plugged an electrode into the roots and plugged one onto the leaves I can't remember what type of tree it was, some sort of conifer in Sherwood Forest in the US.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. What episode is this?
Episode 53, Plant Electromagnetic Output as Music with Tom Wool.
Yes, I remember that one, and I found it quite interesting. So, yeah, go on.
Okay, so what happens is that this device that he has, which is from like the late 70s, it interprets plant electromagnetic output into musical tones. So it's not like that's just a normal thing, and that in itself would be very interesting, but it wouldn't probably make the most, like, probably wouldn't make my favorite episode just off of that. What I found most interesting was that this dude with his electric guitar can influence the output of the plant, and that is just such a far out concept to me. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean that the plant can hear itself? At what level does it recognize its own output? At what point does it recognize Tom or some external force as music? Because, you wonder, like, are plants alive, that we share a common ancestor, but they don't have a brain or they don't have a nervous system? What are plants? And that episode really raised a lot more questions than it answered for me.
Yes, well, there is a lot of talk about them being sentient and having feelings and, you know.
But what does that mean for an organism that doesn't have a brain and a nervous system? What is the experience like? Is it just dead inside and it's just responding, like, unconsciously in some way? Or is there a ghost in the shell, so to speak?
don't know, but I don't think, I think when we think of these things, we tend to compare to human behavior or feelings and stuff, and it's obviously not like that.
No, yeah, anthropomorphize. Yeah. We anthropomorphize them. We turn them, we want them to be like us, but they're not like us in any way, shape, or form.
No.
So it reminds me of that movie, and I brought this up in a plant communication episode, which I haven't released yet, but which will be live by the time this episode goes live, with Katja Hogard. And I sort of said it reminds me of that movie, if anyone has seen it, Arrival. It's just about this alien who kind of comes to Earth, and they're like trying to communicate with humans by just giving them these circles. And the humans are like, that's not, we can't interpret that. That's not any language that we understand. And it's like, I think it's like that with, you know, at least with animals, you can tell they're emotional. Like you can read their body language cues. You can interact with an animal, but can you interact with a plant? Well, I don't know. At what level is that a true interaction? Anyway, so this guy can actually influence the output of music made by the plant, or at least he can influence the electromagnetic output of the plant, which is translated as music. And I don't know what that means.
Well, you better go back and revisit that episode and do a bit of research. Yeah.
I watch his videos all the time. He should put out new ones more often, because he doesn't put out enough videos. And what an interesting character too. I've never had anyone like him before. Talk about an artist. The way and scientists won't take him seriously because he's so passionate about it, and there's no part of him that is like cold and uncaring, which is what the scientists probably want to hear. But I think that this deserves a closer look, a scientific look, and so does Katja. She agrees.
Excellent.
So, Karen, I had a few honourable mentions too.
Yeah.
I like this list of 10 episodes, it just falls short because there are another 40 episodes that I want to talk about in the top 10.
Yeah, of course.
Just never going to work.
No.
But some honourable mentions I had were the event episodes, like my Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show coverage and Landscaping Victoria landscape show coverage. They're great. You can sort of just get a lot of different stuff all in one bang. As I said, those industry events, they're showcasing what's going on.
Yes. Keep you abreast of things.
Yeah. So the Bug Bites series with Ian Smith, he was doing a little series there for a while where he'd just go over one insect-like organism. So we also did like arachnids and slugs and worms and stuff like that. It wasn't all insects, but they were insect-like. I like that term too, that title, bug bites. I thought that was cool. No one else has taken that.
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Ian Smith. So Ian, he's a regular on the show, as I said, but his bug bite segments was really cool. Out of all of the episodes, I chose spiders for the honourable mentions just because I just thought it was so interesting. You know, this is a much maligned so-called pest in many gardens, but if we reframe spiders into a beneficial organism, it sort of our gardens will be a lot better off. He went over some of the most fundamental aspects of spiders, including the types of prey that they consume, different hunting strategies, whether that's some type of a trap or actively hunting, and also he sort of supplied enough interesting fun facts, and he keeps the tone very light that you barely even realize you're learning. So I thought that that episode was a really good representation of his very bingeable series.
Yeah. Okay.
So Scott Smith also had his own segment called Hort Skills. And the episode that I would like to highlight from Hort Skills is the chainsaw episode. So I personally have my chainsaw ticket. I think it's to fell small trees. Oh, there's two things on it, fell small trees and cut up logs or something like that. Just the basic one that a lot of people have. But a lot of people don't have that ticket and they're still using chainsaws and they're being very haphazard about it. They're walking backwards without a chain brake on. They don't know what a kickback zone is. They're just, you know, you sort of look at them and you go, oh. And I've actually had a lot of people work under me and they take offense when you say, no, I'm going to chop this up. Actually, you don't have it. And they're like, you don't need a chainsaw ticket to do it. I'm like, yeah, you just walked backwards without putting the chain brake on. So actually, I'm going to do this. Thank you very much. And I think that it's just such a danger in the industry. Mm. And this episode is aimed at harm reduction. It doesn't advocate people to use chainsaws. It actually advocates for them to get training before they even pick it up. But it's also about, I know that you're not going to do what we say, so at least understand about these fundamentals before you even pick it up.
Definitely. It's sometimes a disaster waiting to happen with some people.
Yeah. And the consequences are real.
Yes.
It's not like it's not going to tickle. It's going to take your leg off, or it's going to, especially with the kickback zone, Karen, you see people cutting towards themselves and it's skimming. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
Just missed my nose.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, you've got this special thing between your eyes and you don't want to lose it.
Exactly. Okay.
So the next honourable mention is episode 189, Horticulturist versus Property Developer, with my mum, Karen Fuller.
Yep.
So it was really fun to interview mum, and I held her feet to the fire as a developer. So, you know, I move in gardening circles. I often see anti-developer sentiments, like why do we need developers? They're evil, this, that, and the other. And so I simultaneously can see where they're coming from, but also I want to – I think there's an element that they're missing, and I think that, like, this utopianism view – you know, it sounds great. Let's all just get rid of developers. But then what happens? You know, it's not, the world isn't as simple as that. And I wanted to show my listeners that. And I wanted to show them two sides of an argument. So I didn't just agree with everything mum said. I really tried to be like, do you care about the environment? And because I know she does. We grew up with the veggie patch and, you know, we grew up with on an acreage and in a country town. Kangaroos, we just let kangaroos eat certain plants, and some of them, you know, we'd battle them and try not to let them into the veggie patch, and they'd break down the fence and get in anyway. And we really did have like a connection to nature growing up. And I know mum loves nature, but in a developer, she has to put her developer hat on, and it was fun to make her, I don't know, express those two different sides. And I just thought that was really good. She's actually a hippie permaculturist at heart.
Yeah. I don't have anything against developers. I just like to see more green space involved, you know, like the green infrastructure.
Oh, she doesn't.
I know. And see, this is the problem, isn't it? This is where people get a bit dirty on developers, because they think, well, you know, you've got all this money to spend on the developer, on the development, but why not factor in some green infrastructure to make it an absolutely amazing development. Like I've, you know, just seen, like you see in Singapore, but just last weekend I was in Sydney and during the week in Barangaroo and looking at, you know, what that's transformed into and the beautiful greenery that's been included. It just makes it a much more appealing environment.
I'm on the same page. You're preaching to the choir here. You need to tell that to mum. Yes. She thinks it's like, I call it developer's garnish or developer's parsley. And she's like, yeah, it is. She goes, it's an afterthought. By the time I get to the landscaping, I'm so sick of this development. I have had problems coming out my ears this whole time. And now I just want something that's going to look good enough to fetch a good price. Like there's no passion there for horticulture that she's expressing in this context. She loves plants. In her own place, she'll do it. But I think she views her development as an investment. It's not a passion project.
It just makes you wonder if the investment would be higher, or not the investment, but the profit would be higher because it looks so good.
So I think there's a sweet spot.
Yeah, I guess there is. Yeah. And anyway, we're probably not here to discuss our views on that.
You should interview her and hold her feet to the fire as well, Karen.
maybe not. We're both Karens, you know.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's funny.
Okay.
So another, I've got so many more honourable mentions here. I didn't think we'd already be an hour in. Look, I'll just fly through these honourable mentions. Episode 163, Native Logging and Sustainability, needs to be mentioned here because I don't often speak my mind on this podcast, but when I do, I usually have a guest say it for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So this is an episode of that. I personally think that the Victorian logging ban is pretty silly and short-sighted. So I got on a forester and asked him provocative questions to express an alternative perspective to what I was seeing all over social media, even from, you know, unrelated landscape industry associations that shouldn't be being political.
Mm.
So Victoria's just banned logging, I think, by this year. They just said no more native logging. Everything has to be done on farms. And then people are like, well, hang on. Where are we going to get our timber from? Because you can't grow a tree overnight. So what you're asking us to do is to chop down the Amazon. Whereas in Australia, we had all these systems in place to make sure that the ecosystem was, you know, happy and healthy. And I know it sounds good to just go and ban logging, but it doesn't remove our need for timber. So it just seemed really short-sighted and kind of silly.
Mm.
Like, I'm an environmentalist, but, like, come on. We're all adults here. We're all grown-ups. We have to live in the real world. We can't just live in this utopian fantasy.
Mm. Well, sadly, the way things are going at the moment with the bushfires, there mightn't be anything left to log.
So let's get rid of all the loggers and take humans out of the system and see what that does. Because nature just looks after itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say the place would probably thrive.
If they left, or you mean if they...
If we got rid of humans, everything else would probably thrive.
No, that's a utopianism again, Karen. That's not true at all. What would happen is that if you take... Okay, let's just take the forest as a microcosm. Those people who were in there were taking fire protocols. You know, they were doing fire breaks and this, that, and the other. If you take people out, the climate is still changing. There's still going to be effects going on, but at least humans can sort of mitigate some of it and you know, take humans out of the equation. And I don't think that the planet is in a better place. I just think it's in the same place just without humans.
It's more human behaviour.
Yeah, but humans are pretty cool too, Karen.
Oh, definitely.
I think we're the most amazing thing that this planet has ever produced.
Well, it's all about balance, isn't it? It's the web of life.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, well, we can be pretty terrible too. We're probably also the worst thing that this planet has ever produced.
Yeah.
Except for fire ants.
Oh, dear.
Okay. So next honourable mention, we've got to fly through these. Mm-hmm. We're probably only going to get through three more honourable mentions. So episode 128, Restoration, Rejuvenation and Restorative Pruning with Charles Sadler King. So there's a culture in the gardens that I've worked in, Karen. I don't know about you, but we often don't have that time. As I said, you know, it's not budgeted in to maintain, you know, hedges, specifically in this case, hedges. It's just about brushing a hedge trimmer over the plant, cleaning up the trimmings, giving it a blow down, then moving on. But in episode 128, Charles teaches us how to prune hedges so that the foliage grows beneath that outer 2 centimetres of the hedge and how to reinvigorate an old hedge and keep them looking their best. And I just thought that was such a valuable addition to the portfolio or the catalogue.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, what I find quite interesting about your comments there is that time is an issue, so why put hedges in the first place? Because there's such high maintenance, you know.
We put in, there's that. I think we're brainwashed into it is one factor. You know, we put in golden diosmas in Melbourne. Do they look good? Do they? Like, is that a great plant to put in? They're a pain to hedge unless your blades are perfectly flushed together and sharp. But I don't know. Why do we put them in? They kind of garish that yellow colour. I don't know why.
Everyone likes different things, but that's aside from the point. Like, I just think that hedging is high maintenance. So if you don't want a team of people spending a lot of time on a job, don't put hedges in.
And I think that so sometimes there's we get brainwashed into putting hedges in, and then sometimes I think we put a plant that's going to be too big for the space, and then it just becomes a hedge by default.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, but you're right. Why put hedges in?
Yeah. Careful planning and have an informal hedge and And if you want it to a 2 meter hedge, put something that only grows to 2 meters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And be patient because the garden is never finished.
Yeah, but you know that sounds like an interesting episode of how to restore them, because often you do see them and they've been let go too woody and you know look unsightly. So
I can tell you hundreds of times I've been told to prune a hedge down. And I have to take them, you know, come out. I just need to show you something. Come out here. And then you pull apart the foliage and there's only foliage on the outer, like 2 centimeters of the plant. Yeah. And inside is all woody. And they're like, so what do we do? We prune it down to the base and let it resprout? Or, well, actually, Charles gives us a new framework to view that. And it's about, you know, using your brain and just an incredible wealth of knowledge, that man. And I really need to interview him again.
Yeah.
So, look, this will be we've got two more honourable mentions. Episode 111, Microclimates and Protected Growing with Guy Deakins. So I don't know about you, Karen, but microclimates is such a big part of how I do horticulture.
Mm.
It's just foundational. It's right up there next to soil science and climate. It's like, yeah, you can talk about climate till the cows come home, but, you know, if you've got a wind tunnel there and you've got light reflecting off the window behind a plant, that plant is not living in the same climate as the rest of the plants in your garden.
Yay.
Mm. So I think, you know, Guy pitched to me to come on the podcast. He's just pitched me and he said, oh, I wrote this book on microclimates. And I get a lot of people every week pitching me to come on the podcast. Usually I don't respond because I don't have time to respond to everybody. Especially, well, the people who I won't respond to are people who I know haven't listened to the podcast. They're like, oh, I love your podcast. They always say, I love your podcast. I love your podcast. I've got a great topic for you. It's about the power of plants in a garden. And it's like, okay, no. It's like you just don't get it. Like we're beyond that.
Yeah.
We need to go deeper. So Guy Deakins was one of the better pitches I've ever had. So he sent me a digital copy of his book and it broke down the whole topic of microclimates and protected growing. And yeah, so it was a total no-brainer to get him on. He was a great guest, really knows his stuff. I was really excited by that episode. So every now and then you get a guy come along and pitch you a really good topic as a podcaster. And you got to know the difference between the good ones and the bad ones. I'd also recommend that book too. Really good book.
Okay.
So last one, Karen, honourable mention. Lucky last. Episode 100, How to Compost with Mark Valencia from Self-Sufficient Me. So that was my second interview with Mark Valencia, who's the creator of the Self-Sufficient Me YouTube channel. And that's a show that I've been watching for years and was an inspiration for Plants Grow Here. Even you might not think it looking at the two shows, they're very different. He's focusing on his garden. I'm focusing on topics outside of my own expertise.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just thought he's such a rigid-edge bloke and I've always loved the channel. And, yeah, it's cool to get to interview people like that. So he's one of the most charismatic composters on the planet, and besides Costa, of course. Yeah. And, yeah, he was just a really good guy to interview and really broke it down, so to speak.
Yeah.
Broke down composting.
Excuse the pun.
So, yeah, those are – look, I know I want to keep going, Karen, but we're
– I'm sure you do because, you know, I'm just sort of scrolling down all your different episodes and you know, you've really reached far and wide because you've done quite a few – interviewed quite a few people from overseas with the UK and the USA. It's quite versatile, the type of topics that you've had. So well done you.
Thanks, Karen. Karen, if you had to pick one, and don't pick yourself, I know what you bloody like, but pick one episode.
I didn't want you to talk about me.
But if you had to pick one and it's not you, which one would you pick?
I know you did a really good one with Gabrielle Stannis on interior plantscaping.
That one should have made the list too. Yeah,
I remember that because she was so good. And
My God, she nailed that. Yeah, I know. She
just
should have
trying
made the
to find
list
what episode it is.
Yep. Yeah. Would have been relatively early. It'd be a fair way down. But yeah, like so many episodes like that, like interior plantscaping. Well, some podcasts focus like on houseplants for their whole, for the whole podcast. In hundreds of episodes, you may not get the level of depth that, that, yeah, that Gabby gave us.
Yeah. And she was terrific. She's, one thing I'll say about, Gabrielle is she's a really great researcher as well. She's well experienced, but you know, she's a really terrific researcher and is very, very careful to make sure that she's accurate. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was a really
But she's also, some people who are like very research oriented lack the personability, and she doesn't lack that.
Yeah.
She has the personability. She's kind of got the both. And Katja Hogard is another person like that who I'll, listeners might just scroll down just a couple of episodes and you'll hear that one, because I'm not sure exactly what episode number it'll be, but I haven't released it yet. She's the same. She can explain topics. She's a great communicator, but does the research.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's so many good ones. You know, you've got therapeutic horticulture in there as well.
That one nearly made the list as well.
With Dr. Kate Neal. She's great.
I went into that episode having a different perspective than when I came out of it.
Yeah.
I think I asked her, is therapeutic horticulture just basically gardening? And I thought the answer was going to be yes, and she goes no. And I was like, oh, no. Okay, let's buckle up. What are we going to do here?
Yeah, therapeutic horticulture, actually now doctors can prescribe horticultural therapy as opposed to prescribing drugs.
Antidepressants.
You know, and, so that's an area that's really getting a lot of focus and worthy of that focus.
I think when it's like gardening is just good for you, but I think that the difference is when it's sort of when a gardening experience is conducted by somebody who has the specific focus and the skill sets to direct it around, you know, well-being, it becomes something different.
Yeah, well, gardening and nature generally, you know, like forest bathing and, you know, yourself, you know, if you go for a walk through a parkland and the smell of the soil, especially if it's been raining, you know, it's and looking at the tree trunks and...
But, Karen, it takes a conscious decision to experience that, because I know from my experience I can run around with a hedge trimmer for 8 hours straight or a brush cutter for 8 hours straight in the middle of the forest. Probably not a hedge trimmer in the middle of the forest, brush cutter in the middle of a natural resource management area, and not connect with nature one single time because I'm listening to heavy metal music or gangster rap or whatever. And
so you're not supposed to be doing that when you're trying to de-stress. You're supposed to be absorbing the nature around you and that whole mindfulness thing, you know?
Yeah.
So get rid of your heavy metal and your gangster rappers. Well, you know?
Put it aside for a later day maybe.
Yes, you shouldn't even be using those references in the same sentence.
Why not?
Well,
heavy metal and gangster, or do you mean
no, along with with horticultural therapy and mindfulness, you know?
No, that's an example. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. Like I listen to so many podcasts when I'm like gardening too, and that's just another experience. But towards the later years of being on the tools, I would try and make a place for having a lunch break, which is something that I didn't always do. I would often just rush. But I've noticed that having a lunch break in a quiet park somewhere is really good for you. It makes time slow down. Or soft focus, which is a term that I heard. So it's like looking at especially a tree where it's interesting enough to hold your attention. You watch it swaying, but it's not entertaining enough to take your mind away from your just – slow thinking, like your background, whatever's going on, or even if you can stop thinking, even better. But if your brain is full of like watching a movie or something like that, or listening to music, there's no space there, and that space is really important.
Oh yeah, I'd have to say there's some music that I could listen to, and find that a way of
good point
you know, tapping into your relaxation and stuff.
But like anyway. World music and classical music and stuff.
Well,
like
not even, you know, just different types of music. I can't even think of any off the top of my head, but sometimes on Spotify I'll just put on cafe tunes or something like that, and it's just calm. Mind you, most cafes I go to around here, the music's so loud I've got to leave. My eardrums are banging.
It's a gamble, isn't it, when you play music? Other people might not like it.
Yeah. Okay, so where does this leave us now?
Well, there's always one question I've just realised that is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about? But
well, that's what I should be asking you. Is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about?
I should have foreseen this, shouldn't I?
You should have. See, this is what you do when you put everyone on the spot.
No, I shake my head at return guests who didn't think about it. Now here I am doing the same thing. Oh, wow. So what message, what could I say that I hadn't said before? Oh, when you're sick of listening to podcasts, when you're on the tools, take a moment to just unplug. And I know it's a chore, but try and enjoy it. Well, don't try and enjoy it, just enjoy it. Just enjoy a moment of peaceful nothingness, because your brain will thank you and it will work better throughout the rest of the day. And if you make that a habit every day to just turn off for a little while, whether that's through meditation, whether that's through having a quiet lunch break without any talking and just looking at a plant moving in the wind, it's really good for you. So do that. Yeah. And that's a lesson to me too. I need to do that too.
Yeah, it's true.
Take your shoes off.
Yes.
If you can, and it's safe. Take your shoes off. When I'm mowing the yard in my place, I take my shoes off, and yes, they get dyed green, and my toenails are often green, but I like it, and it's good for you, and I reckon you should try it too.
Excellent. Okay, well, on that note, perhaps we should finish off by saying congratulations on reaching 200 episodes. It's certainly a milestone for you, and I'm sure you're pretty proud of yourself and chuffed that you've had such a variety of guests and learnt from a little bit of something from all of them.
Yeah, thanks, Karen.
All right, well done.
Talk to you soon. I hope you enjoyed that insight into the podcast. I make this show as a resource for the green industry to help us see beyond the veil of what we used to think yesterday. If you know an employer or leader that values professional development, send them a link to a few episodes that teach topics like how to prune trees correctly, integrated weed management, or intro to soil science. Some episodes are worth listening to more than once. Make a habit of scrolling through the back catalogue to see what's relevant for you at this point in your gardens or in your career.